This is Amber Ray.
And Rusty Tanton.
And you're listening to Mostly ITP on the Georgia Podcast Network, the show focused on all things Atlanta and sometimes elsewhere.
This is the second part of a two-part interview with Bobby Blackwolf, host of The Bobby Blackwolf Show. It's part of our Meet Your Affiliates series. The interview took place at Manuel's Tavern on June 28, 2008. This second part is mostly focused on the Atlanta game industry and the politics of gaming. Enjoy!
So Atlanta actually has a pretty big game industry.
It's getting there, yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, you don't ever really hear about it if you just read the newspaper or surf the interwebs and the general news sites.
You do actually, you hear about it a little bit. Like, recently they did pass a law which would give tax incentives to entertainment companies. And it's TV, film, and video games. And, in fact, Georgia is actually one of the leaders in giving tax incentives and, you know, incentives for video game companies to come here. And Georgia is one of the few, actually I think it's the only state in the U.S. that actually has a full-time person in the Office of Film and Video that specifically works with video games. His name is Ashante Bradford. Yeah. Very nice guy. Talks to me every once in a while. We call up and talk about that. But there's like a 10% tax break for video game companies that just passed last week. Or 2 weeks ago,
which
like
that's
that.
No joke in a game like Grand Theft Auto or something, which probably has a $5 or $10 or $20 million budget, whatever it is, something that's comparable to a movie.
Yeah. And you know, they work and they're trying to bring all these game companies to Georgia, not really just Atlanta, but I mean anywhere in Georgia. And in fact, what's kind of funny is that I can't remember if it was one of the United Kingdom. I don't think it was England. It might have been Scotland or something. Actually went on record saying, look at what that U.S. state Georgia is doing. We need to do something like that. You know, and you know, basically people are starting to use the state of Georgia as a model as to how to woo video game companies. And one of the things, you know, Georgia's always kind of been nice to video game companies. In fact, Georgia actually does have a law in the books that is video game legislation. It's one of the only ones that has not been overturned as being unconstitutional. And the video game industry is actually fine with the law. The law is wherever video games are sold in the state of Georgia, they have to put up a poster or something that describes the ESRB ratings, which rate the games, kind of like the movie ratings, but the Motion Picture Association of America would not let them use the movie ratings. That was their original thing.
Yeah.
So, you know, E for everyone, T for teen, M for mature, and stuff. There, it is an actual Georgia law that a store has to show those ratings within proximity of the video games in clear, readable text. It's the one of the few game laws in the country that has not been overturned. And Georgia's Attorney General Thurbert Baker actually partnered with the ESRB. He was one of the first attorney generals to partner with them on an ESRB campaign. Around the same time that this law was put in, to try to educate parents about the rating system, because frankly, the ESRB is the one rating system that works the most out of all the rating systems in the U.S. Video games just get a bad rap, but I mean, I pick up a game box of, let's say, Grand Theft Auto 4, and I pick up a DVD box of Natural Born Killers. Okay, the rating for Grand Theft Auto 4 is about, you know, in a two inch by two inch box on the bottom left in bright white, black on white, at the bottom left corner of the box. Natural Born Killers, you have to turn it all the way around on the back, and
so
it's dark,
tiny little rating.
Dark red text on black background. You need kind of a magnifying glass to see that it's rated R.
Yeah.
You know, and people are saying that the video game ratings don't work and they're not visible enough to parents. They are. It's just we need to educate them. And Thurbert Baker was one of the first attorney generals in the country to actually partner with the video game industry rather than trying to work against the video game industry like several other states have done. And now they have to pay out exorbitant lawyer fees because Illinois had one. Their governor tried to push one through. It was ruled unconstitutional. Now the taxpayers of Illinois have to pay the video game industry's lawyers.
What kinds of things are they trying to push that's unconstitutional?
Essentially, they want to push a law that makes it illegal to sell a video game to minors, much like the cigarette law. Illegal to sell. Some of them use the ESRB ratings, others don't. The one that was in California that Governor Schwarzenegger was behind did not even touch the ESRB ratings. They had to have their own rating, a 3-inch by 3-inch circle saying mature audiences that would... We didn't know how it was determined. It's more like they're kind of looking at it kind of like pornography. What is pornography? It's what I point to and say it is.
Yeah.
You know, and that's kind of what
I know it when I see it.
Yeah, I know it when I see it. And so they're trying to restrict the sale of these to minors. And essentially what this, you know, which I agree with the fact that it should not be easy for a 16-year-old to buy an M-rated game. I don't think the government should be the one to do that.
Yeah.
I think it should be the retailers. And a lot of retailers are doing their own initiative to check IDs on M-rated games.
Oh, the movie industry is very, you know, movie theaters are pretty good about that.
Movie theaters are pretty good about that. But, you know, there's no law on the books.
Yeah, exactly.
They're not forced to do it. And yet they're trying to force the video game industry to do that.
Yeah.
You know, there's nothing stopping a retailer from selling a parental advisory CD to a minor.
Yeah.
They can check ID. I mean, in a lot of them, their policy is to check ID, but there's no law in the books. And some of them have wanted to fine the retailer. Others, one of them wanted to fine the actual purchaser for buying it or something like that. It was really weird. And there are states where these have passed because it's for the children. What politician is going to vote against the children?
Don't even get me started on that.
So, but what's interesting is I have actually heard that some of them have said it was an election year.
Uh-huh.
I knew it would get overturned in the courts. But at least now he can go out and say, I tried.
Yeah.
I tried to protect the children, but that darn First Amendment just got in the way.
There, you know, Georgia seems to be a state, not necessarily specific to this subject area, but in other areas where they will put stuff out there that they know is going to get overturned.
Right.
Some of the voter ID laws and things like that. I'm not going anywhere with that. It's just it's just noteworthy to me.
Well, that happens everywhere, and, you know, it gets actually passed, and, you know, kind of like what Senators Clinton and Lieberman were trying to do with the Family Entertainment Protection Act, which did work with the ESRB, you know, or they were going to use the ESRB ratings, but they wanted to have, like, an FCC oversight on it because of one of the things that happened with one game, and, you know, they were trying... It didn't really go anywhere further, but the ESRB was born out of Senator Lieberman and some of the other congressmen getting outraged over Mortal Kombat and other games that sucked and nobody bought. Like, if anybody remembers in 1994 when the government went after video games the first time, it was Mortal Kombat, which was the one everybody heard of, and this game called Night Trap.
Oh, okay? Night Trap was the worst. I had that game.
Night Trap was a game for the Sega CD. It was one of the first CD-ROM games, and basically game developers had this new toy, a CD-ROM. Obviously, that meant we can have live actors in full motion video, and it starred Dana Plato.
With 64 colors. That was excellent.
And, you know, but it starred Dana Plato, and basically Night Trap was a game where you were a security camera operator in a sorority.
Mm-hmm.
And zombies or some vampires or something were trying to come in and attack the sorority girls, and your job was to stop them. Well, if you failed, the zombies got to the girls. That is what upset the Congress.
Because there were consequences for your failure.
Right. And it showed you
that
your
upsets Congress frequently.
Yes. And it showed you your consequence. Yeah. And nobody bought Night Trap when it came out. It was
except
so
me.
Horrible, except you. Until it got highlighted by Congress.
And I may have bought it after that.
You might have, because nobody had heard of it. Nobody had really played it.
It was a terrible game.
It was terrible.
Yeah.
And nobody bought it. But then it got featured by Congress, and suddenly it's like one of the top-selling games for the Sega CD because of that. You know, and there are other games. Like, a lot of the games that they go after, nobody bought. You know,
until
they freak out about it. And that's kind of why, you know, the Grand Theft Auto series is so big, because they didn't really need to do that much of publicity for it. Everybody else did the publicity for them.
Yeah.
You know, and there are other games that are that have tried to.
In the case of Grand Theft Auto, though, they're actually good games.
Grand Theft Auto is a good game. Other games that have tried to rip it off, like True Crime,
yeah.
which actually had you play as a cop, mm-hmm. but you could also play as the bad guy and shoot the cop, and that's what everybody got upset about. You know, some of those other games, they're using it for the publicity, and people are buying it, and then realizing it's not that good. Grand Theft Auto is one of the few exceptions.
Yeah.
Mortal Kombat was an exception. Mortal Kombat was actually a good game.
I like the second Mortal Kombat. That was probably the sweet spot of the series for me. I played the first one in the arcade when it came out, and then it came out on Super Nintendo, and they had, like, the gray blood popping out.
But the Genesis version had the blood.
But the graphics weren't as good.
Right.
So you had a trade-off either way.
And, you know, now they're doing Mortal Kombat versus DC Universe.
I've totally lost track of the Mortal Kombat.
That's the new one, is Mortal...
How does that even work?
Anyway. Well, you're
cartoon characters, one of them.
No, actually, they look, I've seen some of the screenshots. They've, like, Batman, you know, they basically made the DC characters look like they belong in the Mortal Kombat universe. But it's not going to be rated M, so there's not going to be as much blood or as much fatalities. We don't even know if there is going to be fatalities
Which,
in it.
You know, the whole appeal
of Mortal Kombat.
I would just stand around for hours at the arcade just watching other people do fatalities on each other.
Because it was difficult to do them. It was like an 18 combo, 18 button combo, and if you messed up one, you screwed up, and it was over.
Yeah. You had to pay three rounds to get to that point.
Yeah, and, you know, it's... So, they've kind of gone after these games that aren't all that good, like Postal.
Yeah.
Not a very good game. Funny, but not very good. And, you know, everybody went crazy over it because, you know, you could urinate on the heads of people and, you know, things like that. And, I mean, it was more of a satire than anything. And people were going crazy for it, over it. And so people bought it. It must be good if, you know, Joe Lieberman hates it. It must be good. I'm going to go buy it right now.
Well, yeah, that's quite the endorsement. If Joe Lieberman is freaking out, it's a good reason to buy the game.
So, and, you know, there's a lot of misconceptions about games. Like, there was a recent comment by a New York representative. I think it was a state representative. Talking about video games. Talking about the rape scene in Grand Theft Auto 4. There is no rape in Grand Theft Auto games. There are only two games I can think of released in the U.S. that had rape or forced sex. Custer's Revenge, which was for the Atari 2600, and it wasn't even released. It was sold in porn shops. It was by a company called Mystique, and actually the case for the game was like this little leather-bound, discreet case. You know,
how do they even do rape with little pixelated stick figures?
Okay, so the object of Custer's Revenge was... You're in a field, and there's an Indian woman tied to a stake over on the other side. And there's arrows coming in. You are Custer, complete with a little, like, three-pixel, like, basically block, and then another block, one diagonal up, and another block, one diagonal up. And that was his thingy. And you're trying to get across while dodging the arrows. And if you get to the end, you hit the fire button a whole lot of times, and you grind up against the Indian. And that was the entire object of the
game.
That
was the entire game.
That was the entire game. Right there. And it was. And it was only sold in porn shops. And you can actually, I've got it on the emulator, you know, you can see it. But the other one was a game called Phantasmagoria, which was actually done by a woman by the name of Roberta Williams. She was with Sierra. She did a lot of the early wholesome, like, King's Quest games. She did a Mother Goose adventure game on the PC in the 80s and things. And this was one of those full motion video things. And in one of the scenes, it was a non-interactive scene, but there was a rape occurring. No nudity or anything, but it was just a part of telling the story. Those are the only two games I can think of released in the U.S. that have forced sex. You know, we can go into Japan and talk about their hentai culture.
A little different.
They've got some doujin games that have questionable content like that with tentacles and stuff.
Yeah.
But never released in the U.S.
Yeah.
But, like, Grand Theft Auto 3, what everybody was upset about with Grand Theft Auto 3 and the hot coffee, or not Grand Theft Auto.
I saw that, and it was the lamest thing I'd ever seen in my entire life.
And it wasn't even in the game. Basically, what we're talking about, Grand Theft Auto San Andreas, in the original release of the game, so if you bought the game on day one, or actually, it's in all the games, is you had the option to get a girlfriend, and you romance this woman. And if you romance her in enough dates, and this also happens in Grand Theft Auto 4, if you romance her enough, she will invite you into her house. And in San Andreas, she invited you in for some hot coffee. And so you go in, and then the screen fades to black, and it comes back out, and you're walking out of the house. Well, originally, what the intention was is there was going to be a mini game in there, a rhythm type game where you pressed buttons and there were simulated sex acts.
Uh-huh.
Now, if you had the PC version of the game, you could download something off the internet that opened this back up. Because essentially what we do a lot in programming is, a lot of times it's really dangerous to outright remove code from the game.
Oh, sure.
So what they basically did is, let's say it's a house, okay? And there's this room of the house and you don't want people to go in there. Instead of demolishing the room, they walled over the door.
Yeah.
Well, basically, you could download something to replace that door.
Yeah.
They put the door back in, and so there was this unfinished minigame that you could get. It was on the disc, but it was down. You had to have something off the internet to download it and to get into it. And on the PlayStation 2 and Xbox versions, you could use this device called a Game Shark to open up that door as well. And basically, that modifies your game. Most people use it to get like infinite lives, infinite health, things like that. So this came out and everybody went nuts because it was on the disc, and they re-rated that version of the game at AO, adults only. Well, you can't, most stores won't sell AO games.
Yeah.
The only retail store I've seen that will sell AO games is Fry's.
Yeah.
But like Best Buy won't have it, GameStop won't have it, Walmart definitely won't carry it, and Walmart's most of the sales of video games.
I mean, you've seen this thing, and it's not something that's really even particularly a big deal. And what's amazing to me is that people will get upset over this lame simulated sex.
Yeah.
But you can take a sniper rifle and you can blow somebody's head off. You can take a rocket launcher and shoot a police helicopter out of the sky. And that's not as upsetting as simulated sex.
Right. Consensual.
Consensual.
After several dates.
Yes.
I mean, Mass Effect.
Yeah.
More recently, Mass Effect is this big sci-fi space opera. Very epic. Very epic in scope. And essentially, during this, one of the things you can do is you can have start trying to have a romantic relationship with one of the other people, one of the other women on your ship. And basically, you have to, you know, woo them. You have to treat them nicely. You can't be mean to them. And eventually, in the middle, there will be a nice, tastefully done minute and a half sex scene, either with the human female or the alien female, hermaphrodite, actually. Or actually, they're unisex. That species doesn't have a sex. But it looks and talks like a female. And there's a little bit of a butt crack, and there's a little bit of a side boob.
Yeah.
And it's a tastefully done romantic scene for about minute 30. Non-interactive. And the clincher is, you could play as either a male or a female. And so you can have the lesbian with sex with this
female.
But
it's not really a lesbian if it's the alien.
Right, yeah. Exactly. However, Fox News did this big expose on this game. They had somebody come in saying, you know, oh, who's not going to choose to have the sex with the woman? And this is horrible. Where's the government in this? Why is this not rated AO? You know, why is this, you know, oh my gosh, you know, heaven forbid. And the funny thing is, Fox News, when they showed the clip, they showed every single part of it.
Exactly.
You know, I mean, they put their logo over the little side boob, but that was like the raciest picture of the entire thing, and they're all going crazy over it. And poor Jeff Keighley, who is a journalist, one of the more respected game journalists out there, was actually on trying to defend Mass Effect. They were cutting him off, telling him, oh, honey, you know, and he actually asked, have you actually played the game? And they're like, of course not.
Yeah.
You know? And luckily, that person, because she got Amazon bombed, like, people wrote comments on her book. She did some, like, self-esteem book and stuff, and actually posed quite sexually on the cover of her book. And so all the gamers left reviews on her book about how, I never read it, I just looked at the cover, and I think that she shouldn't be this racy and yada, yada, yada. And so, and she finally had somebody show her the game, and she actually did resend her comments and say, I apologize, I didn't know what I was doing. Because basically Fox News just said, here's what's in it, go on.
Yeah.
And so she
put
was
you on the air.
You know,
we're not going to let you prepare with any research or anything, because that would be...
Well, I mean, she knew about the child psychology part of it, but she didn't know about the game part of it, you know.
Yeah.
So, you know, people are freaking out over the stupidest things. But you want to know what's funny? It's, you know, Mass Effect got attacked, Grand Theft Auto got attacked. You ever played a game called God of War?
I know of it. I don't have a PlayStation, though.
Okay,
so.
God of War is a game about a Greek it's a Greek, it's in the Greek myth area of a man named Kratos who has to defeat gods and, you know, be basically becoming the god of war. There are boobies at the beginning of level two, like right out there. And then you go in, you jump into bed, and it, the camera pans off to the side, and there's buttons that come up, and basically the object is to get the vase to fall off the side of the table. And then it cracks when it's over. And then you get health from this.
Yeah.
Not a peep from anybody.
And God of War is a pretty popular game.
It's very popular. It's Sony's most popular game.
Yeah.
I mean, it's their biggest selling game, God of War 2, because it was on the PlayStation 2 and not the PlayStation 3.
Yeah.
So in PlayStation 2, it's like 60 million install consoles.
Yeah, I mean, PlayStation 2 is one of the biggest things around, you know. I mean, I don't know very many people who didn't have one.
Yeah.
I mean,
so, you know, but not a peep over that. And they're right there in the beginning of level 2. Even the PSP game has it, you know, for the portable system. But, you know, they'll go after Mass Effect for showing half of a side boob, and they'll go after Grand Theft Auto for a part of the game that wasn't even in the finished product.
Yeah.
But they won't touch God of War.
Anyway. getting back to Atlanta's game industry for a minute, what companies are here in Atlanta that people might actually recognize?
Well, the biggest one that people might actually recognize is, Turner.
Mm-hmm.
All of Turner's stuff is here. Cartoon Network actually has a new media game studio division that is based here. One of Turner's properties is called GameTap.
Yeah.
You may have seen commercials for GameTap or seen billboards around it, but essentially it's a program for the PC and the Mac that allows you to play games, play a lot of these old games, not Custer's Revenge, but other like old Atari 2600 games, Commodore 64 games, and a lot of the newer games, and they're even putting some original content up, like an episodic game series called Sam & Max, which I love. They're working with American McGee, who is a level designer back in the day for id Software, his new Grimm series. It's an episodic series coming soon. And they're based all in Atlanta. Basically because Turner is here. And so most of their testers and their all marketing people and, you know, developers are here in Atlanta, down North Avenue. Not North Avenue, but like 14th or down that way.
I've got two or three friends who work at Turner, and I've never heard about that.
Yeah.
Or at least I hadn't heard about it until a little while ago.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, I mean, but they've been working on GameTap for years and stuff, and it's basically, it's taken off. I mean, people are enjoying it. I mean, it's not getting as much success as they probably would like, but I mean, it's a great deal. They have like 800 or 900 games on the service.
Yeah.
If you pay a monthly fee, you can play any of those games at any time. And for the PC, they've got some, like, they've got Civilization 4, which is a big game. They've got all the Prince of Persia games, the recent Prince of Persia games, the Tom Clancy Splinter Cell games.
Yeah.
All, if you have GameTap, you can get these. They also have a lot of free games now on their website. You don't even need to log in to play them. And there's like a lot of the old favorites, Pac-Man, Galaga, you know, some of the other PC games. Like now you can play the Tomb Raiders and stuff. You can play for free on their website, GameTap.com. They're an Atlanta-based company. One of the big gaming companies here that was big in the pen and paper industry, White Wolf, did Vampire the Masquerade and all those, a lot of tabletop gamers.
Huh.
They recently got purchased by a company called CCP, which CCP Games was based out of Iceland. And essentially the state of Georgia convinced them that they should make their home base in Georgia, and they merged with White Wolf. CCP Games, their big MMO, massively multiplayer online game, is a game called EVE Online. EVE Online is a very complicated space simulator. Basically, the developers from Iceland that said, we want to make a game that has its own economy, period. That was the basis for the game. And now it's like, I mean, these players are hardcore, and you build your ship, and you can do all this stuff, and there's big, big, huge space battles, very popular. It's one of the top 10 MMOs out there. I mean, obviously, it's not World of Warcraft, but nothing else.
Yeah.
But it's still one of the top ones. It actually has 200,000 subscribers in over 80 countries. They bought White Wolf, and now Atlanta, they're not developing EVE Online. They're in Atlanta. They're developing that still in Iceland. But some of their support is here in Atlanta, and they are working on an MMO based on the White Wolf World of Darkness. And that's a big thing. And they've hired a whole bunch of people, you know, like hundreds of people, 175, 200 people, just from the Atlanta area to work on development, art, design, and all that stuff. Electronic Arts actually bought recent... Electronic Arts, they were the number one third-party publisher. Now they're number two behind Activision. But EA, they do Madden, which most people would probably know. They do a lot of other games, and, you know, like The Sims is an EA game.
Oh, yeah.
The upcoming Spore.
Yeah.
EA Challenge Everything. They recently acquired Supercomputer International, which is an Atlanta-based company. And they also have an R&D lab down at Savannah College of Art and Design down in Savannah. And they recently reopened, let's see, I've got a cheat sheet here because I can't say all this off the top of my head. They recently re-signed a three-year extension with Savannah College of Art and Design. So they're doing research and development on future EA titles in Savannah. Let's see. Kineva is... They don't make that big of a wave in the game industry, but they're...
They're more of a Web 2.0.
They're Web 2.0.
I mean, it's sort of like Second Life.
Right. It's like YouTube plus Second Life and stuff. But they have over like a million subscribers. That was started by a Georgia Tech grad.
Yeah. Chris Claus,
Chris Claus. And, you know, that's here in Atlanta. And they're pretty much one of the largest, you know, virtual worlds and things like that. But, yeah, it's more Web 2.0. But they're considered a game development company. And they have the game, their Elite Developer Network. And that's Atlanta-based. Cell phone games, Blue Heat Games, which I actually applied to work there a couple years ago, and unfortunately just didn't work out, not because they didn't want me, but just because of they didn't have the money to hire anybody new, but they really wanted to hire me, so I don't fault them for that. But they do a lot of cell phone games, and they're actually one of the country's largest independent cell phone games. And they're up by Lenox, is where they're located.
What games have they done that maybe we've downloaded on our cell phones? Do you remember?
Snoop Dogg Boxing was one of their big ones. But no, actually, early on, I don't know if they're doing them anymore, but it was a lot of the THQ sports line of games, like 5-on-5 hockey, was developed at Blue Heat Games. Because Marcus Matthews, who was the CEO, worked for Sega Sports. He was kind of the executive director of Sega Sports when the Dreamcast launched in 2001. So the first NFL 2K, he was pretty much one of the guys in charge of that division.
Yeah.
And I think he's a Georgia Tech grad, and he wanted to come home. And so that's why he came back, worked with Ken Leitner, who worked with Holistic Game Design. That's where he was with. They do pen and paper stuff, the Fading Suns universe. And they form Blue Heat Games.
Yeah.
And they're one of the largest cell phone game providers out there. I think they're working on a Jimmy Neutron game, I think they've done, and some other stuff like that. I haven't looked at their website recently, but I know that they're still going strong on cell phone game development. Let's see. Persuasive Games. This is kind of interesting because this is the only company that does this kind of stuff. It's actually headed by a Georgia Tech professor, Dr. Ian Bogost, who basically deals with what's called serious games. These aren't necessarily fun games. They're more...
I think I've heard of this.
Yeah. They do more like about airport security, disaffected workers. They did a game on Kinko's and stuff like that. And, you know, I think they've done a McDonald's game and stuff. But he's big into serious games and looking into games that actually explore issues, kind of like how documentaries in movies will explore serious issues. They may not be very entertaining as a movie, but you learn something and you're thinking about something.
Yeah.
And that's what Serious Games is, that the whole initiative is all about. And that's based out of here in Georgia at Georgia Tech. And in fact, Dr. Bogost has actually been on the Colbert Report. So he was on with Stephen Colbert talking about this stuff. And, you know, it was a good little interview and stuff. But he's pretty much known worldwide as one of the leading people. And Persuasive Games is based here in Atlanta, creating these socially relevant games. And he hates the term game.
Yeah.
So it's more like an interactive experience, because a game denotes that it has to be fun.
Yeah.
And a lot of his games aren't fun, and he admits that. He's like, I'm not out to create a fun game. You know, but we could actually talk about a whole other game that's not based in Atlanta on the same vein that, you know, people don't like. But I won't get into that unless we have more time at the end. But, you know, so, but that's based here. And then in terms of like shooters and stuff, a game called Red Orchestra is actually developed by a company called Tripwire Interactive, and I think they're up in Roswell. And it was actually the best multiplayer game of the year and FPS of the year for 2006 by some publications. So it's one of the most played PC multiplayer games in the world. You know, probably right behind, you know, like some of the Steam games, Half-Life, Team Fortress. But Red Orchestra is pretty popular, and that's done by a Roswell
company.
I've heard
of that, yeah.
Yeah, they're up in Roswell. And then, you know, kind of the last one that I can think of, they're more of like a webcomic, but Homestar Runner.
Oh, yeah.
They're based up in Atlanta. In fact, I'm going to be
in Dunwoody, right?
Yeah, I think so. I'm going to actually be meeting up with them for an interview on my show in the next couple of weeks, because they've got a game coming out on the Wii and the PC, Strong Bad's Cool Game for Attractive People or something like that.
Yeah.
And it's an episodic game and stuff, and they kind of do video games on their site with the Vitalectrics brand, like retro throwback games. But they're here in Atlanta, and they're about to make a big splash. One last thing, if somebody out there is interested in the Georgia gaming industry, we actually do have a convention in Georgia. It's called the Southern Interactive Entertainment and Game Expo, Siege, or SiegeCon.net. Now, I actually went to this last year. It was really interesting. They brought in a lot of the people that were local. They brought in some people from outside, but it was mainly all the HR representatives from the companies were here because they were bringing college students in to meet the HR representatives. So if you're even looking to get a job in the industry here, that's a good place to go. It's from October 3rd through 5th at the Hyatt Regency Suites in Marietta, right off of Windy Hill Road. And it's a weekend. There are LAN tournaments as well. Some of the local LAN cafes, Computer Arena, eWarfare, they come in and set up stuff. And you get to meet all the HR people. Now, I will say, one of the things that annoys me about the game industry, and I know that if Vishante Bradford's listening to this, he knows this, because I've told him on several occasions. I think there's too many MMOs being made. You know, there's not enough Red Orchestras being made in the state, because, you know, MMOs take about 3 to 5 years to develop, and then, you know, you're trying to grab a piece of World of Warcraft's pie, you're not going to do it. You're, unless something miraculous happens. I never thought EverQuest would be dethroned, personally.
Yeah.
But World of Warcraft just totally demolished EverQuest.
Well, it's like anything else. Everybody thinks they can dethrone the king, and, you know, most of them can't, but maybe one of them does eventually.
Right. So, you know, I'm kind of like, you know, but there's no real game other than, like, Red Orchestra that we can point to and say, that's a Georgia product right there. And so I'm kind of upset at that. And the state of Georgia is really pushing our college programs and our college graduates. Now, granted, there are 16 colleges in Georgia that have game design programs. Georgia Tech, UGA has, like, a new media thing. But, you know, Savannah College of Art and Design, Art Institute of Atlanta, the DeVry campus of Alpharetta has the game design program. And there's a couple others, like I think Kennesaw's got something and Southern Tech has something. But they're really pushing the college graduates. And so game companies, when they come here, aren't looking for already existing tech professionals that maybe haven't worked in the game industry.
Sort of senior level people.
Right. You know, like, I can't get a job at a game studio here in Georgia because I'm not a recent college graduate. I have 8 years of experience in the tech industry doing development for, you know, defense contractors. I worked with defense contractors. I've had clearance and stuff. You know, so I've worked on big database systems, Oracle DB2. I'm developing websites right now for real estate companies and things like that. There's no room for me right now. Because they're trying to hire the college students that they can mold. You know, it's the Microsoft mentality. Microsoft only wants to hire college graduates that they can then mold into their own consciousness. They really don't want to hire people who already have experience because they're kind of set in their ways. You know, and Microsoft wants you set in their ways. And these game studios are kind of the same way. But you can try, and the HR people will be there, and they'll talk to you about your resume, and you can get tips and learn things at this convention in October.
Excellent. Well,
and one last thing is the Game Developers Association, Georgia Game Developers Association, the GGDA. They are an official organization. They're official professional industry organization. They have meetings each month, and a lot of the big players are there, so you can even go in and network there. And I think it's ggda.org is their website. I didn't write that one down. But SiegeCon will take you right to them because that's their convention and stuff. And they're part of the International Games Foundation and stuff. And so a lot of the big names are there. They have monthly meetings. They'll fly in speakers. And so if you're really interested in maybe getting into the game industry or learning more about it, that's where you need to go. and is getting pretty active, and they're trying to build Georgia as the next Austin, Texas.
Yeah.
Because Austin was kind of the last city that wasn't in California or New York to have a big game explosion because of its software and Doom. They were based in Austin, and now there's this whole industry that's built up in Austin, and they're trying to make Atlanta the next Austin.
Well, thanks for coming on the show, Bobby. It's been enlightening. And what's your website?
My website is bobbyblackwolfshow.com or bobbyblackwolf.com, goes the same place. They all point to my show page over at allgames.com, which is All Games Radio. I'm actually the station manager there, so we have affiliates and stuff. We broadcast over 40 hours of new content a week in terms of talk content. Probably about 15 or 16 hours of that is live. We have live daily shows called All Games Interactive and Dead Pixel Live are each day. For a couple hours each day, usually in the afternoon, East Coast time. I'm on Sunday nights at 8 p.m., mainly because that's the only time I can really guarantee I'd be there.
Yeah.
So I'm live for an hour, and then I'm followed by a show out of Sacramento. And we actually do the show called Orange Lounge Radio. And we actually do kind of like what Daily Show and Colbert Report do.
The throw. Yeah.
At the end, I call the people in Sacramento. I'm like, so what are you guys going to... We kind of riff on some things. And I ask them, okay, what are you guys going to talk about in your podcast tonight?
Yeah.
And stuff. So we broadcast all that, but everything is available as a podcast feed. We have all the RSS feeds on our site. You can download all the MP3s. And we're all in iTunes and things like that. And we broadcast game music when we're not doing talk programming. And we have several days worth of game music, and I mean, I'm a big game music aficionado. In fact, the stream is pretty much my personal collection of music.
And you do some composing too, don't you?
I used to.
I used to.
I did some game composing, music composing in the 90s. I wanted to become a music composer, do game music as a living, and then I realized there wasn't that much money in it. So I kind of fell out of it. So we've, just got a lot of stuff. And all of our shows, we have a lot of affiliate shows, other independent podcasts that we just air after they've gone out on their podcast feed. And we kind of do talk about the same news a lot, but it's always different perspectives.
Well, their tone is a whole lot different than the tone on your show.
Right.
I mean, like, I've only listened to a couple of episodes of that.
Of All Games Interactive?
Well, of the Orange Lounge
Radio.
Because, I mean, like, I hadn't even heard of it until, they went over to All Games.
Right.
And tone's very much, it's very different tone.
Right.
And, I don't know.
And we have other shows that, one of them called Metaspective is actually like a truck driver and, a working class people talking about games. And then we've got one show that's all women, Electric Sisterhood. We've got a show that is one my favorite, Super Happy Fun Time show, which is actually a guy in the UK and a guy in the US talking about their perspectives. And so it's funny when the U.S. gets a game before the U.K.
Yeah.
And, the U.K. will get a game before the U.S. And they basically give their take on that. We've got a show we got two shows that's broadcast on traditional radio. They're done on AM radio. One of them is Chatterbox, which is in Phoenix. And the other one's Evil Avatar Radio, which is based off of the EvilAvatar.com forums.
Yeah.
Evil Avatar is one of the big independent gaming news sites. They're on the radio in Montgomery, Alabama. They actually do an AM show there, and we rebroadcast it. And we have a couple other shows that I'm probably forgetting as well. Video Game Outsiders, three guys that really don't, aren't really deep into the industry. They're just gamers.
Yeah.
And so they come in with that. So they may not know exactly like the inner workings.
Yeah.
But a lot of people like, because they don't know the exact inner workings.
Well, I mean, there's something to be said for that kind of input,
Right.
I mean, if I were going to do a video game show, that's where I'd have to come from, because I don't have time to play that many games now.
And then we have Ultimate Quest, which is an RPG basically just focused on role-playing games. And then the video games show, which we air on Saturday nights, that's actually, it's also done in an AM studio, and it's like, actually, it's really cool because they do voiceovers as well, so they actually have that radio voiceover voice and stuff, and they're more urban in the way that they look at games and stuff. So, we have a great mix, and we may be talking about kind of the same news, like when Grand Theft Auto 4 comes out, all of our shows are probably talking about GTA 4,
Grand Theft Auto 4,
but it's all different opinions of the shows.
Yeah.
So, I hope I didn't forget any of our affiliates. Under Sedation Live is not about video games that much, but they talk about it some.
Well, thanks again, Bobby.
Yeah.
We really appreciate you coming on the show.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Yes.
The song you're hearing in the background during bumpers is Acquiring on Impulse by Bobby Blackwolf. The song you heard in this podcast was Flux by Drop Trio, available only on Magnatune.com.
Thanks for listening to Mostly ITP on the Georgia Podcast Network. Visit us at gapodcastnetwork.com. If you have a question, comment, or drunken rant, leave us a voicemail by calling 678-389-9441. Who knows, it might be featured in a podcast. You can also email us at info@gapodcastnetwork.com.